Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Waltrip Unfiltered. It's my podcast. You can tell your friends about us on their favorite podcast app. We're also available across all the Fox Sports social media channels. And today, I'm honored to have the president of Toyota Racing Development, Mr. David Wilson, join me as my guest today. Dave, thanks for coming on board. Appreciate you and looking forward to hearing your stories. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Michael, I'm honored to join you today, and thanks for having me on your great podcast. This should be fun.
I can't wait to talk about where we're at in the 2020 season, how proud you are of Toyota and NASCAR for getting going this year, and how much you're looking forward to the rest of the playoffs. We'll do that all right now on Waltrip Unfiltered. Dave, thank you so much again for joining me. Toyota Racing Development has been such a big part of NASCAR since the early 2000s, when you showed up and started racing in the truck series, and now a big part of the NASCAR Cup Series, Xfinity as well. It's been quite a ride, hasn't it? We've known each other pretty much since the beginning.
It has been quite a ride, Michael, and you could actually date our entry, if you wanted to, all the way back to the Goodies Dash series. If you remember, that was part of the NASCAR Touring series. I think Wayne Auton used to oversee it, and Jerry Cook used to help. But that's really where we got our start, even before the truck days in 2000.
Yeah, and I remember Robert Huffman winning races for y'all. And I'll give you a little bit of trivia here, Dave. Guess who the 1983 NASCAR Goodies Dash Series champion was?
Gosh, I don't know.
one young Mike Waltrip.
Mike Waltrip.
And it's funny because, you know, most people know me today as Michael Waltrip. And then my friends call me Mike or Mikey. But it's funny. On my race car back in 1983, we wrote Mike Waltrip, and I thought, well, that looks weird. And my mom always used to call me Michael, so I said, I want to be Michael Waltrip when it's written. And but in 83, we won the Dash Series Championship, and I knew the success you guys had when you came Dash Series racing. I would like to go back to the beginning and how you've been a part of this for so long. You were there.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, if you rewind our playbook, Michael, we were heavily involved, engaged, invested in open wheel racing, you know, champ car racing, then IRL. And I'll never forget, you know, 2003, we won the Indy 500. We won the IRL race in Japan. I think we won 13 out of 16 races that year. And our top management came to me and said, okay, this means we're done now. And I'm like, what? And as much as it pains me, it just wasn't resonating amongst our team and Toyota. And I think it kind of reflected at the time the challenge open wheel racing was having in our country. You know, there was a lot of division, and it had changed from its heyday. So we kind of saw we were kind of reading the tea leaves, and me and a couple of others, you remember some of the names, Michael, Dave Illingworth, one of them. He was one of my mentors, but we kind of, you know, figured that we better start looking for something else to do. And of course, NASCAR was you know, on a tremendous upswing. And it started with a couple of very casual conversations with Bill France Jr. And we had, Dave Ellingworth and Jim Ost had a meeting with Bill France Jr. in Century City, Los Angeles. And, Bill said, we all are welcome to come join us. And it started with that conversation. But we also were keenly aware of how polarizing our participation might be amongst the fan base. And we wanted to try and do this with all the sensitivity that we could pull together. And we decided to come in through the Goodies Dash series really just to give us a chance to get our feet wet, to give a chance to build relationships with people like Jerry Cook and Wayne Otten and of course the fans. So that really served us well. Again, built some, special relationships with the drivers back then. And, again, Robert Huffman, who's still a good friend to this day. He won our first NASCAR championship technically in 2003 in the Goodies Dash Series. And it was cool. You may remember this, Michael, but at the Darlington, Brandon Jones ran a throwback scheme, the White House
Apples,
Toyota, yeah, White House Apple, Toyota. It was a Celica that we ran in the Dash Series, and Robert was so proud of that. Robert's son was so proud of that, and of course it made me beam, and of course it helped that Brandon won that race in the White House Apple Celica. So it started there, and then. We started to crawl, in the Truck Series. And I have a special place in my heart for the Truck Series. I know you do, Michael, if you still spend some time there. We loved racing the trucks, and we had so much fun. And again, it was about, building relationships. Your Bert owned a team. And running with David Rudiman and of course we won some races there. Every time Bob Germain and I see each other pre-COVID, at least we would give each other a big hug and talk about the good old days when it was fun to race. And, Bob and his brothers and Todd Bodine won a couple of championships for us in the Truck Series, and then 2007 came along, and we decided to take the big step into the Cup Series.
Yeah, I want to go back a bit. I'm glad you said a couple of things, because I want to talk about the trucks, but I also want to talk about Mr. France, Bill Jr., because he was near and dear to my heart. We were friends back when Dale and I were friends, and I just want to know how intimidating he was but how smart and how honest he was. What do you remember about those early meetings with Bill Jr.?
Well, intimidation certainly was part of it. A lot of nervousness, anxiety. The France family are the founders of our sport, and just thinking about that, saying that aloud is pretty awe-inspiring, and so we went in to those meetings with a great sense of humility, and we appreciated so much that Bill would even give us an audience and come all the way out to Los Angeles and share, some of his vision for the sport. But, if you think about it, they really didn't need Toyota to join the sport. Things were really clicking back in those days, but he clearly had a vision to expand the participation amongst the manufacturers. And, you know, for him to extend the invitation. And again, it was with his terms, you know. And I remember one of his things is, well, y'all just don't think you're going to win too much. Okay. You know, and, but that's, you know, that invitation is what opened the door for us to take this further. And so here's another funny story. Michael's remember talking about, you know, some of the rules, and we actually made the mistake at the time of asking about, well, what do you all think about fuel injection? You know, and of course we didn't build a car, a production car with a carburetor on it, right? And that Celica engine that we ran, that came as a production block, you know, out of a Toyota, I think it was out of a Tacoma. And we had to retrofit, you know, a Holley carburetor onto that thing. And
that looked funny, didn't it?
Yeah, it looked kind of funny, but we learned about carburetors. But the end of the story is we were told directly, respectfully, but directly, that we didn't need to worry about this fuel injection. We're doing just fine,
right?
And of course, I look at where technology's come in the sport, and you know, today we're talking about, you know, within the next few years, a revolutionary, you know, new engine with
right.
direct injection, multi, you know, four valve, you know, new materials, and you know, that again is still a couple of years out, but yeah, that's a great remembrance, Michael. And again, we still treat the sport, its fan base, with a tremendous amount of respect and humility, because by and large, while the early days were a bit bumpy and not everyone was thrilled to have us, today, you know, for the most part, we're just accepted as one of the boys. And you look at a parking lot of any given race, and you'll see not just Toyotas, but, you know, Nissans and Hondas, and of course, a fair amount of Fords and Chevrolets. And I think we kind of, by the respect that we showed the sport, helped make it okay. And of course, we'd love to see other OEMs join us, whether it's, you know, Honda or Nissan or whomever.
Or Miata. Miata.
Who's that, Michael?
What about Miata? Would you like to see a NASCAR Miata out there on the
a Mazda? Why not? Hey, I gotta tell you
a funny story. So, and you know this story, so I guess I'm telling our listeners. I had a Bush team at the time. I was operating from behind my house, and we were winning races. And I got a call from someone. They said, you ought to talk to Toyota. And I said, well, I'm actually a driver in the Cup Series, and I'm not sure how that all work, but I got a guy that I know that I think you can call, and his name is Daryl. And maybe y'all give Daryl a call and see if he wants to have a truck team. I got to tell you, from 2003, 2005, 2007, those were my favorite memories of NASCAR. Like we were winning races with our team that we had from in my backyard. My brother started a truck team with Toyota. And I felt like I was in on the ground floor. And this was like the coolest thing ever to be a part of. And of course, we eventually in 2007, went Cup racing with you guys and started our own team with Dale Jarrett and David Rudiman and me as drivers. This is my question I've been wanting to ask you since you said you would do me the honor of being on my show. How many years ago does that seem like to you? Because to me, it feels like at least 100. Like yeah. There's no way it could have been just 13, 14 years ago, because
yeah.
Holy cow. What a ride it's been since then, for both of us, I guess.
It really does seem like forever ago, Michael. But you know, I want to say just a couple of things with a great amount of sincerity, and I say this all the time, actually, that we're in the sport by and large because of the help that you and your brother gave us along the way. For Daryl to step up and be one of our very first truck owners, for you to step forward and step out on a limb and make a tremendous, you know, personal and professional investment to be one of our very first Cup team owners. What that did to this fan base is say to them that these guys are okay, give them a chance. And we know how much influence our, you know, the legends of the sport have to our fans. Because one of the things that we did before we ever turned a wheel on a racetrack is we went out and talked to a lot of fans. And that, again, you know, your participation and your brothers helped so much, and we will be eternally grateful. Of course, we didn't finish our story, I feel like, Michael, but we won some races together, and we won some races together. You know, when I see Clint Bowyer, you know, yesterday, Sunday on that roll, and he was leading laps, I go, well, I know Clint Bowyer is a damn good road racer. He won Sonoma for Toyota and Michael Waltrip Racing in 2012. 12? Yeah. But I, you know, David Ruderman won the very first TRD engine powered cup race, the Coke 600, no less, in 2009.
Yes.
You know, so you know, I do treasure those early wins. And put that in perspective and talk about how long ago this was, Michael. We started our 500th cup race on Sunday at Charlotte. That just blows my mind.
Wow. Yeah, blows my mind too. And the fun we had getting things going, the how naive we might have been, and you know, we started out thinking that this is not going to be easy, but we're certainly going to win soon. And our team just struggled mightily out of the gates, but with your help and with a lot of determination and perseverance and some great sponsors like Aaron's and Napa and UPS, we built a organization. We finished second in the championship. And those are things that I will never take for granted, that what we were able to accomplish. I wish the story had a better ending, but it certainly had a great start.
It had an amazing start. And again, we did some special things. I always say, you know, I remember that first season. You remember we'd go to the racetrack and hope we could get a couple cars in race, right? And because that was not assured. This is well before the charters and all that business, right? You had to race your way into every race. And we showed up to Daytona, probably 60 cars entered for that race, right? Back at that time, or it seemed like there were.
There was like the second, I remember this, the second race of 2007, there were 66 cars showing up for, you know, for 40 spots. And we would miss by like a hundredth of a second, and we would think the world was going to end. And somehow, through relationships, we were able to fight through that and make our way into the starting field. And that brings me to the next. Like, as we look to where we are today in the world of NASCAR, I have like 100 questions to ask you. This one comes from my, on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, we have an Ask Mikey, hashtag Ask Mikey. And we get questions from our listeners about what they might like to hear from our guests. And the one that I've gotten mostly lately is, and I want to get your opinion on this, how, let's fast forward through all we've been through. How proud of you are you of where NASCAR is today, leading the way back from COVID and the pandemic, getting sports back on the track, and you being able to race your Toyota cars? I mean, it's gotta make you proud to be a part of it.
I am floored by what our sport was able to pull off, and you know, knock on wood, we still have four weeks to go. But you hit it on the head, Michael. Our sport, NASCAR, was the first pro sport to make it back. And we have not only just made it back, but we've done it uninterrupted. And I'm not just proud of Steve and the guys who, you know, from a leader perspective, really made all of this happen. But I'm proud of all of us, because Michael, what was happening in the background is they put together these working groups. You know, started with it seemed about 200 people from teams, from the OEMs, from the networks, from the track owners, and all of us worked collectively in the background to figure out the protocols and decide, you know, the rules and how we're going to do this. And it was one of the times where everybody put down their selfish agendas, and we all agreed that we were all going to need to give some in order to get our sport back on track. That's exactly what happened. And I know the OEMs get a couple of spots there on the roster, and I've been able to get to a couple of races myself, and I'm just so proud of how vigilant, I mean, even now, however many races it, you know, we're about 32 races in, most of those under COVID, and everybody, you know, all of the team members are being hyper vigilant and just doing this the right way. So it's an incredible achievement. I think we wrote the playbook for the rest of sports, and yeah, we have a little bit of advantage in those race cars, you know, give our drivers central social distancing, but they try and close that up on occasion, tracks like Talladega and such. But again, by and large, it's gone unbelievably smoothly. And here's the thing, Michael, is if you think that, you know, if we think that, you know, Daytona 500, it's a new day and everything comes back to normal, you know, just not.
It's not going to happen that way. We got a lot more stuff to figure out, right?
That's right. And we're likely to see a lot of, you know, a continuation of this, and many of the protocols well into next season, as much as we hate it. But we're privileged to get to go racing. I remind my team members all the time that, you know, don't think too much of what we do for a living, because in the realm of how important is this, you know, to our, you know, survive, you know, to society contribution, you know, okay, it's entertainment is what it is. But, and these fans, our fans, ourselves, we need this entertainment, particularly in times like this, right? I was in Charlotte for the Roval, and of course there are some fans there, and I walked in, you know, I walked into the track with the fans, and as I was watching up from a suite, and you could see the excitement. It was palpable. You know, the they were smiling under those masks, and just so excited to get to the track and root on their favorite driver. So, how cool!
Yeah, it was really cool. You touched on the rules, and how we've gotten back racing. Do you believe limited practice, limited qualifying? To me, and I'm an eternal optimist, I always try to look at the bright side of things. I think it's made it more entertaining for me. You know, if you watch practice for 2 days and you see the guy that qualifies the fastest starter front, I feel like I got a pretty good idea who's going to win. And when there's no practice and we're not guessing, I know Toyota has done a great job of bringing more technology, more engineering, more simulation to it, but we're kind of guessing about what'll work and how it how the setups will match with the weather, if you will, temperatures, humidity, blah blah blah. But to me, it's been we've learned to put the product on the track on Sunday afternoon in a more a responsible way. A, B, obviously we're saving the team some money, but then C, for me, I'm liking what I'm seeing on Sunday afternoon because of the lack of on-track practice. Do you agree with that?
I agree wholeheartedly, Michael. Even in the worst, in the very worst of times, and this is a bad one, there are things to learn, and there are several linings, and I think this is one of them. Of course, we agreed to that protocol, to do our best to protect our team members, to help our team owners survive to get to the next gen car. And I think we were all a little anxious about how it was going to go. But just as you said, the racing has been great. Racing has been great. I don't think we're missing much of anything because it's the same. The bottom line is it's the same for everybody. And you made mention there is technology today. There are tools that you can use to get prepared. But it really shows the caliber of these racing teams. You know, we're not having parts fall off of race cars, right? And so we already know that going into next year, what is it? I think 28 of the 36 races are going to be with no practice and qualifying. And I think it's great. And it dawned on me, right? Watching a little Sunday night football. Guess what? They didn't do before the first snap. They didn't practice, right? Practices that's, they show up in play. And we show up in race.
Right, right. Practice.
We're professionals, right?
Are we talking about practice? The lack of it is what we're talking about. You brought me to an interesting point. So I want to ask you some questions, and they're going to be, I won't say they're rapid fire, but I want to hit you with four or five quick questions. And the first has to do with, and there's been some stuff on the internet, I've read it, about your driver development program. Now, obviously over the last several years, you've had the most aggressive young racers getting opportunities and good cars to get chances to prove their worth. One of the stars of that program has been Eric Jones, driving for Kyle Busch and winning truck racers. I've been really blessed. I've been a truck commentator for many years. And when Eric Jones showed up, I said, not only is he going to win truck races, he'll win cup races one day. He's that good. And now he's leading your system. Tell me where you are right now with driver development and your thoughts on Eric and what's next for you guys as on the development side, because you've given so many young racers great opportunities.
Yes, I'm glad you asked about that, Michael, because our driver development program is something that I view as not just important to us in helping us develop these young athletes, men and women, girls and boys, but it's also a way that we can give back to the sport. And I said at the outset that it's an imperfect process, and And the first place it falls down is we don't own racing teams, right? So so it's not always a certainty that as these kids develop, that we'll be able to assure that they'll be able to stay in our product. And so, you know, ultimately, if we lose some along the way, and we're going to lose as many as we keep just because of that fact, but the sport still benefits. You know, when William Byron won his first cup race, I took an immense amount of pride in that because we had a hand in his development, and he and his dad, Bill, are still friends of Toyota, and they look back on us fondly and respectfully. So, you know, Mr. Hendrick likes to poke me in the ribs and say, Dave, you know, I'll just wait, steal your driver from you.
Who's next, right?
You're doing a great job, Dave. So keep developing those kids. And so you mentioned Eric Jones and of course, Eric, won't be back, unfortunately. And that was tough, because we had, you know, we've had a lot invested in Eric, and you know, circumstantially, we weren't able to keep enough cars on track, and it came down to, you know, a bit of a Sophie's choice. So what I focus on is because of us, Eric Jones is a NASCAR Truck Series champion. And he has won a bunch of truck races, a bunch of Xfinity races, a couple of cup races. And I take pride in that. And I feel like, you know, it was partially, you know, because of our participation. So, you know, I tell each one of these kids, and, you know, particularly the ones that, you know, they're in their 20s, like Eric and William, that, you know, you got a long, you know, a couple of decades worth of driving to do. Who's to say we won't be back together one day, right? When Martin Truex Jr. left to go run that Chevy team in Denver, last thing I said to him, Martin, is our story's not over yet, and let's see what the future holds. And the rest is, you know, history, as they say. So, you know, anyway, it can be hard because I take each one of these relationships personally. I take a personal responsibility in them, but I can rest at night because we take it so seriously, and we don't, you know, these are people, and they have families, and we get to know the families. And so I'll say this, Michael, in spite of, you know, how difficult it can be, we are resolved to continue developing drivers. We're pleased to see, you know, our friends at Ford step in to do some of that themselves. And of course they've had some great success with the likes of Chase Briscoe and all. And again, it's good for our sport.
Yeah, and one of the drivers that they've taken on is going to make her Truck Series debut this weekend in Kansas. Haley Deegan
is right.
In Kansas. Toyota racer, and now she's a Ford racer. I know there's friendly competition, but I'm almost going to guess there's got to be some pride from the Toyota side to say, you know, we saw value in Haley. We saw that she was really special, and the Ford people sees it as well. And now she has this opportunity. How does that make you feel, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, of course. The first sentiment is I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for her, you know, personally. And again, I'd like to believe that, you know, indirectly, we had a hand in getting her to this level. And of course we have got great relations with Haley and her dad and her parents, and we can only wish her well. We're invested in a lot of diversity, Michael. You know, speaking of Haley, we also had another young lady, Gracie Trotter, win in the ARCA West series in Las Vegas just a couple of weeks ago, and the first first gal to win an ARCA race, I believe. So, you know, to have that, have that association with Toyota is terrific. And we are committed to, continued focus on diversity and giving some of these young drivers the opportunity that they just wouldn't have otherwise. I mean, you know, C. Bell, his family is from the most humble of places. And again, that's the part that I enjoy the most and feel the best about is, you know, how many Kyle Busches have never been discovered, right?
Yes.
Simply because our sport, you know, unlike, you know, the stick and ball, you need a glove and a bat and or a pair of shoes. And, you know, our sport, you get much beyond, you know, go-karts. It's hard for some families to go beyond that. And so, we got folks sitting in, you know, in grandstands of dirt races on a Friday night in Putnamville, Indiana, you know, watching these kids go around in midgets and quarter midgets and again looking for, you know, some Kyle Busches, some undiscovered Kyle Busches out there and trying to give a few of them an opportunity that they would never have otherwise. So it's an investment. It's not perfect, but it's the right thing to do and something I'm super proud of.
I've really enjoyed, you know, getting to know new racers because of you guys. And like I said earlier, I've been blessed to be on the Truck broadcast for 10 or 15 years now. So I see them show up and you can just see special talent from day one. And a kid that showed up and won in the trucks, and you could tell that he knew what he was doing behind the wheel. And he progressed into the Xfinity and now Cup is going to have an awesome opportunity in 2021 with one of your drivers and a really good basketball player.
Michael, you know, I don't have much to say about that today.
I just was pointing that out. One of your race car drivers, with one of your former driver development drivers and this basketball player that is really, you know, he turned out to be pretty special. I just wanted to tell you that I'm a huge Denny Hamlin fan. I've been able to play golf with he and Michael Jordan that I'm joking about. How cool is it that Bubba and Michael and Denny are going to go Cup racing in 2021. Not that you're going to have anything to do with it. I'm not insinuating.
To answer your very pointed question, I am so happy for Denny, who is a friend at Toyota, and it's funny, Michael. My relationship with Denny has grown over the past years, and it just Denny and I were just talking about this just a few weeks ago. We spent probably 45 minutes on the phone, and Denny was talking about, you know, just kind of stream of consciousness in terms of what, you know, what he wants to do once he gets out of the seat, you know, and he goes, Dave, I've had plenty of time to golf, you know, and it was this whole COVID thing when our sport had to take a break. And one of the things that he realized is that as much as he loves golf, that's not enough for him. And he said, you know, I think I want to do something in the sport. I'm not actually sure yet, but we were just kind of talking about that. And of course I said, you know, that our sport, you know, one of the things I'm most excited about is I think next gen is going to, it's going to bring some new ownership into the sport. And that's going to be, that's exactly what the sport needs is a shot of youth And of course, the reason that is because the model, this new car, is one that should allow a team owner to balance their checkbook a lot easier than they're able to today. So as a friend, I'm thrilled for Denny. And as a fan of sports, I'm just gaga about, you know, Michael Jordan being a part of our sport. I remember seeing him. You remember he came to Homestead once or twice to watch Denny fight for a championship. And of course, you know, for Bubba, you know, once again, for Bubba, I'm happy because I think it's a great opportunity for him. And of course, we have fond memories in helping bring him to the winner's circle.
Yes.
First national.
You're the big part of that.
You know, in a Toyota Tundra. So, be interesting to see where the team goes for an OEM.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd almost have to guess, you know, like, I think I would guess where they're going, but.
You just never know, Michael, but yeah. Hopefully we'll all find out shortly.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the funniest memories I have is I got to go down to Michael's golf course one day with Denny, and Denny was on some media calls, and I walk up and Michael's like, what's Denny got to do to win this championship? Can he beat Harvick? Harvick seems like he's faster than everybody right now. Has he got the stuff that's going to take and who is going to, what's up with Logano? What are these guys all like? Michael Jordan he's not just, this isn't some sort of marketing thing. You know, it's Michael Jordan, the competitive, one of the best sports figures, players in the history of sports. He has that same attitude, I can tell, toward NASCAR. So whatever OEM gets them, I think they're going to have a really energetic, a very enthusiastic, and a very determined to win competitor on their team.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, hopefully
let's talk about 2020 NASCAR. Last year you won 19 times, half the races, is that right?
Half the races plus one. That's right, Michael.
All right, I missed it by one. I've done my research. Let me do that over again so nobody makes fun of me. Okay, let's talk about NASCAR 2020. Last year you won 20 times. I mean, that's never been.
You had it right. It was 19. I'm sorry. I said half would be 18.
Oh.
So I said half plus one equals 19. Yes.
My math again.
No.
Let's try a third time. Okay. Last year, and Ford, you can play all this. I don't care. This can be from the blooper reel, but last year you won 19 times. That's half the races plus one. I say that to say this. I don't think anybody's one manufacturer has won that many before. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think Chevrolet did. Michael, I think what made it special for us, which never been done, is one team accounted for all 19 of those races, and that was Joe Gibbs Racing.
Right. So 2020, you've only won, that sounds weird, but you've only won eight times. And Kyle Busch just got eliminated from the playoffs, and he is winless. Martin has only won once. You know, obviously Denny's seven wins is incredible. I've heard you say before that's not good enough. Where are you with your teams with Toyota? Because I'll say this, Dave, the cars seem fast enough to win every week, but it just doesn't happen. Where are you at with 2020?
Yeah, I figured you were going to have to go here because it's something that needs talking about and something that I'm accountable to. But you know, you started it off by juxtaposing it against 2019. In 2019 was one of those magical years wherein it seemed everything would go our way. When there were two possible outcomes, more often than not, we had a good outcome. And I would almost say 2020, is payback, because seemingly everything has gone against us. You talked about Kyle not making the playoffs. Well, you know, I'm not suggesting it's one race, because it's not. But we saw what happened in Las Vegas, right? When all the leaders pitted the normal time in the middle of that third stage in order to, split the stage. And there are a couple of cars that stayed out who weren't going to win the race, who just weren't that good. And an untimely caution turned the field on its head. And it's somewhat ironic, because you could argue that Kurt Busch, kicked his brother out. but I guess at least we have a Busch in the final eight. But to your question, Michael, our performance this year hasn't been acceptable. And I think it's not a question of speed. We've led laps. We've run up front. We typically do most weeks, but for a combination of reasons, we just haven't closed like we're capable of closing, and we're making mistakes that we shouldn't be making. Martin yesterday, or I don't even know what day it is. Yesterday, did we race yesterday? Maybe it's a travel day for me. It always throws me off. But yeah, so Martin raced his way up to third, I think. Or no, he was racing up to third, then he and Kurt got into it. But he had a speeding penalty earlier, in the race. And that really took the possible win off the table. And so that's just, one example. Again, quirky strategy with pit stops, a couple of loose wheels, things that I know that we're better than that. And here's something else, just, very self-deprecating, is I don't think we've adjusted to this format as well as our friends, particularly on the Ford side. And that's on us, because I am a fan of this format. We were just talking about this. It's good for our sport. It's not going away. Even after COVID is gone, I think we're going to adopt a lot of this. So we've got to, we've got to figure that out. And we've got to be better before we get to the racetrack. Now, let me just have one more thing, Michael. I'm sorry. With Kyle in particular, and I said this early on, and I still maintain, part of what made him so good, part of what makes him so good, is he is one of the most involved drivers, and involved in his car. Right, he doesn't just get in his car and drive and ask for help when he needs help. He's used to getting in his car on Friday first practice, and then sitting down with Adam Stevens and debriefing, and the two of them, put their heads together to put a better setup underneath it. And he's somewhat, unique in that. More not that, there aren't other drivers that do that, but Kyle maybe to a greater extent.
Right.
Obviously he can't do that now. And we collectively have to give Adam and the 18 team the tools that they need to show up and be able to race without the level of preparation that they're used to.
So it's 2 versus 6 in this round of 8.
Yes.
And I'm curious, we've talked a little bit about circumstances and format. My question to you directly as the president of TRD, where's the Toyota metal, like the car, the steel, the engine, where do you feel like you are as you enter into this battle to be a part of that championship four? Do you think that the playing field is level? The Fords, the Chevys are all even as we go toward this final round? Do you like where you are with your parts and pieces?
I'm comfortable with the hardware, Michael. I really think we can win the next round. You know, we won Martinsville one, we won Texas one, right? And so we got two out of three that we won earlier in the season. So that gives us some confidence. Our stuff is running well. We're getting good feedback from our drivers. And stepping back, honestly, I think we're, you know, you remember early on in the season, you know, the Chevys were running in a manner that gave all of us a lot of pause and concern, right? I mean, they look deadly. I mean, Bowman, Elliott.
To Auto Club.
Yes.
When practice was over, you said, if Alex Bowman doesn't win this race, he either crashes or blows up, because like it was just so obvious he was faster than everybody. But I don't know, that went away.
They kind of fell off. You're right. And yet my sense, and not just because of Chase winning yesterday, but my sense the last 2-3 weeks, particularly the Hendrick boys, they're back.
They're back.
In the 88, the 9, of course, Kurt is running competitively. And I think heading into the final round of 8, I think we're seeing more parity. The sport is seeing more parity between the 3 OEMs than we've seen in a while. I want all 3 of us to be in, I almost said Miami. I want all 3 of us to have cars in the championship round at Phoenix. That would be a proper championship.
Right. And I'm confident that you want to have 2 of the 4, though, right?
As long as we can have 2 of the 4, exactly. which, believe it or not, we've had the past 5 years running, I think. And we had 3 last year. I still shake my head. How in the world we do that? But you know, I always take a look at the reasonableness of how the championship is developing. And the reality is the 18 car, and Kyle would be the first to tell you, the 18 car wasn't running at a level, arguably, that deserved to advance. And I
sure was pulling for him, though. I wanted him to be Kyle Busch. And everybody's going to say this about, oh, Michael's a Toyota guy. I'm not either. I'm just a sports fan. And, you know, I wanted, for my appetite, I wanted to see Kyle Busch be Kyle Busch and make it happen. I was a little bit sorry that strategy or whatever didn't work out in his favor.
Kyle makes our sport more fun.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you want Kyle Busch advancing? I don't understand. Like, that's just a sports guy. He's going to make it.
And I really, you know, in spite of that, you know, 3 races ago when he got all grumpy and said he wasn't going to advance, don't worry. I think it was the first round, first race of the 3 rounds. And you saw that, you know, Jeff Gluck called it the salty Kyle, right? You know, you can call it salty or smart ass or kind of the grumpy. When I saw that, it's like, okay, he's back. Because that's the Kyle that we know and love. And I talked to him last night, and what I said to him is, I appreciate you never giving up. What he did in Talladega, driving that race car and the left side of it torn off, he almost finished in the top 10. You know, if it hadn't been 3 green white checkers and only 1, and then we could be looking at a different outcome. But he never quit. Yesterday, you know, that cut tire, he got back in there and raced his way up front, and you know, had ridiculously old tires on that Camry, and yeah, he gets salty, but he's a fighter, and I gotta, you know, I think we all respect that.
I think so too. Well, I respect what you're doing at TRD. We have a picture. I'll share it with you. But it's like, you look like you were 13 when we first started this deal together. And you're probably through the first 10 years, then you look like you were really old. But now it's starting to work out. Things are going in your favor. I know you're a fighter, a survivor. I know that you're proud of your military background and the things that you learned growing up and being a part of that. And I want to tell you how much I appreciate not only you sharing stories, but the person you are and how you've represented Toyota in the sport of NASCAR, beginning with your appreciation, respect of Mr. France and understanding that you had your place and you needed to understand that. And now you've fought to be the champion that you are. So congratulations and thank you.
Well, those are very kind words, Michael. And I always take a pretty, I come from a place of humility because sometimes I wake up and have no idea how I got here. And I tell myself I have no business because I don't know what I'm doing, you know, and it really, it's the people around me that make me look so good. It's the Andy Graveses and the Tyler Gibbs and, you know, in our team, you know, from Toyota Motor North America, who love this sport. Now I've, you know, celebrated, you know, 31 years with Toyota, and nothing we've ever done in motorsports comes close to NASCAR. And we've done some pretty cool stuff along the way, but I come from a place of great just thankfulness, and I'm so. I love the way the fans have treated us, and we're fortunate to be in this sport. And as we were reflecting on earlier in this conversation, Michael, I'm forever proud of our relationship and what you did for our company. And most of the fans, we could sit here another hour and tell stories about things that, you know, you showing up in a town and delivering Domino's pizzas to the dealership, you know, service centers who were working 24 hours a day, you know, when we went through that recall crisis, right? And nobody asked you to do that. You didn't tweet about that. You didn't send out a press release. You did that because you're a friend.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm looking forward to the next four. And I'm like you. I'm hoping that everybody is represented there.
Yeah.
And then also hope that Bubba Wallace is driving a Toyota in 2021. If you got anything you want to share about that, this is a great format to share it.
It's a great reason to invite me back, Michael.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, man.
Well, Dave, it was fun chatting with you, fun catching up. Looking forward to watching the rest of the 2020 NASCAR season and see what 2021 has to hold as we go forward. Thanks for your time. And if you could remind your friends, they can find us via their favorite podcast app. They can also find us on all of Fox Sports' social media channels. So I know you have an extensive Rolodex. You can just tell those people where they can watch Dave Wilson's podcast with Michael Walter. I'd appreciate it, buddy.
I would be proud to share your podcast with all of my friends, Michael. And again, thank you for having me on. Enjoyed catching up with you and look forward to the next few weeks at the racetrack.
I feel like this is like on record, but every time I get to do a podcast and catch up with one of my friends, it makes my life more enriched. It makes me happy. So thank you for that.
You made my day better, Michael. You put a smile and I don't spend much time looking in the rearview mirror, and it's good to do every now and again. Gives you perspective, right?
Yeah.
And it makes you realize how lucky you are. So thank you for allowing me to do that today. You're a good man.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good day.
Thanks, man. Take care.